have Hall of Famer Chichi Rodriguez. Chichi, what's going on this morning?
Everything is beautiful. The weather down here in Puerto Rico right now is about 75 degrees and just perfect. I gave a young 12-year-old a lesson, and this kid is going to really be very good. His name is Davis. You're going to hear about him because he's already screamed that he won the Master in the U.S. Open the same year.
Wow. Man, that's awesome. You know, I've been to Puerto Rico, and I think I went there the only day that it didn't rain in the rainforest. How about that?
Yeah, well, they, you know, it rained 305 days a year there. it's beautiful. It's beautiful here.
It is a beautiful place. You know, one of the questions that I got to ask, and I got to know the backstory to it, is how did you end up doing the swashbuckler dance when you made the birdies and stuff like that? How did that come about? Because I need to know.
Well, I used to put the hat over the hole because when I was a kid, I was playing this kid for 5 cents, and I made about a 20-foot putt, and there was a toad in the hole, and the toad hopped out, and there came my ball, and he says he's no good until he hits the bottom of the hole, and he was right. And after that, I started making, when I made a birdie, I put my hat over the hole. Well, some pros, not all of them, not the big stars, they complained that I was damaging the hole, you know, around the hole. And the commissioner of golf, a guy named Joe Dye, who was a wonderful man, he asked me if I could think of doing something else. You know, he says, I'm not telling you to stop it, but I, you know, I... So I went back to the room, and I figured I was a bullfighter. And there was the hole, which was the bull, and I take the putter out, which is the sword, and I stab the bull, and then I dry the blood off and put the sword back in the scabbard. But, you know, in real life, I would die. I knew that it was time to quit the tour when I started doing this the sword for a bogey. And that's the way it all started.
Well, what was the initial reaction the first time you did it?
People liked it, and I always did what people liked, because golf to me has always been show business, and you're on stage and you give the people a show. It's not show business anymore. Golf is a business, and the young guys, they go to their office, and they do their job, and they do it quite well. You know, they're the best behaved athletes and of any sport in the world.
Now, have we lost some of the fun?
Well, you know, they're not playing there for $5,000 first prize if you win. That's the tip now. They have a living to make and a business. Golf is a business now, and these young guys have done very, very well with it. The only thing is that we have not become the best in the world, because everybody's complacent. You know, if you don't win $1.5 million, then you win $1.2 million, and if you don't win $1.2 million, you win $1 million. You know, it doesn't. You don't have to play very hard to win. You don't have to have your goals to win. And golf, like anything in life, is about winning. The only thing better than winning is to win again.
All right, so I got to ask this question. You know, if you were paired with Lee Trevino out on the golf course, who would have more fun, you or Lee Trevino? Because you guys both have a lot of fun out there.
I think they probably take both of us green cards away.
I would almost feel sorry for the third guy if he was a quiet guy, because he'd never get a word in edgewise, right?
Yeah, well, Arnold Palmer played with us one time, and I said, how does it feel to be a minority, Arnold?
What was his response?
Yeah, he had fun. Arnold was a great, great man.
His response was probably to go out and shoot like 62, wasn't it?
Who was that?
I said he probably just went out and shot 62 as the response. He probably didn't even need to answer the question. He just went out and made a lot of birdies, right?
No, oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Arnold was like that. And when he had his charge going, you know, that army would get behind him, and he could make him birdies and eagles.
You know, and that's one of the things that people always talk about. People always talk about, and it's hard to compare players from generation to generation, but in your opinion, who's the greatest striker of the golf ball that you ever played with or have ever seen?
Well, I think Ben Hogan. By all means, Ben Hogan. Tiger Woods could have done it. But Tiger's problem is, you know, all these teachers. I mean, he's an intelligent guy. I don't know how he can't hire these guys that can't break 80 to tell him how to play golf. And all he needs to do is go back to basics. You know, his clubs are too long. That's why he's swinging the club faster right now. And the shaft makes the club. The club does not make the shaft. He needs to go to a 43 driver where he can swing at 135 miles an hour and call on it when he has to really rip it and hit it straight. And his irons need to be bent a little more upright, like 1 degree up, because he's a tall guy, so he can stand up straighter, because posture is one of the basics of the game. I saw him play that first day in this tournament the other day, and I couldn't believe it. He was his hands are as slow as his knees again. Those clubs are too flat and too long. So that's what he needs to do, is just make that change and get rid of these coaches and just play golf. You know, my teacher was Steve Cooper, and he used to go and watch me in the range, and he said, man, he said, son, he says, you are ready. You are ready. You don't need me no more. He watched me hit two or three balls, and he'd go away. But these guys just stick around trying to find ways to get on TV. And he doesn't need that. If he's going to break Jack Nicklaus' record, he better check his equipment. I mean, the Nike equipment is a very nice equipment, but you got to have it set up the right way, you know, and his clubs are not set up the right way. You can't go by those machines. Those machines, you can talk to them, but they won't answer.
Well, maybe he needs to hit a tin can.
I think if he went to a Johnny Miller or somebody to teach him how to set up his clubs, he'd break Nicklaus' record. But the way I saw him play the other day, I think he's in trouble.
Johnny Miller, I think he should go to you, and you should make him hit a tin can with a branch from a guava tree. That's how you learned, right?
Even his short game, he's chili-dipping the ball. When you're chili-dipping the ball, that means that the club don't have enough pounds on it. And an old proven friend is always better than a new untested one. He should have never got rid of his wedge. His original wedge with Nike was perfect.
Yeah.
So that one is a club that you keep alive. You never change a good time wedge or a good putter.
Well, I guess the only good thing about Tiger is that he's trying to go back to more of a 1996 swing, where he just kind of, like you said, played the game. So we'll see how that progression goes. But, you know, I got to ask you about what you consider one of the greatest moments in your life, if not the greatest moment in your life, and that was your encounter with Mother Teresa. What was the impact that she had with you?
Well, you know, her eyes, I never saw lovely eyes like her in my life, and the eyes tell the story of a person. And I was in the Philippines with President Marcos. He and I were very good friends. I think his son is going to be the next president there. Kong Kong, I think is what they call him. And he asked me, he says, the Pope is in town, and Mother Teresa is coming in town, or vice versa. Which one would you like to meet? I said, we'll always have another Pope. We'll never have another Mother Teresa. I want to meet her. So they arranged it to be at the airport when she was leaving and I was leaving. When I got to the airport and I said, Mother Teresa, I'm Gigi Rodriguez, she looked at me straight in the eye and she says, you are rich. How come you don't share with the poor? And I had a check in my left hand for her, and I gave it to her. I said, Mother Teresa, how do you know I don't share with the poor? And she started looking at that check, and she wouldn't talk a word. And I said, well, I better break the ice, because she knew she's sin, and she's praying too much. So I said, Mother Teresa, we're all the sons and daughters of God, you know, and and he forgives anything that we do. So let's sit down and talk. But that night, when I knew I was going to meet her the next day, I prayed. You know, my favorite church is Church of Chicken. I don't go to many churches. I cut the middleman off. I go straight to the man, and he's safer, cheaper, and he's safer. So I just said to God, if she's an angel, I want you to show me. And man, when I shook her hand, every hair on my body stood like I was. I mean, it was the most incredible feel that I've ever felt in my life. Electricity went through my whole body. I knew then that she was an angel. And I tell you what, I'm not afraid of death. I'm still afraid of three-footers, but I don't fear death. I would die for the reason to make her come back now to the world, because the world really needs her now. I mean, I thought that over the year 2000, everything would be better. And the world right now don't look too bad. Look like everybody wants to fight each other.
So from that, tell me a little bit about the establishment of the Chichi Rodriguez Youth Foundation.
Well, that was 35 years ago. I went to this detention center for kids. A guy named Bill Hayes, and he was the assistant warden. And I went and gave a clinic to the kids. They had a baseball park there. I stayed for dinner, and, you know, there must have been 100 kids in that. They call them detention center, but, you know, it was a jail is what it was. And driving me back to the hotel, Mr. Hayes says, you know, I have an idea. I said, what is that? He says, I want to do a foundation with your name to keep those kids from coming in there. I said, well, let's do it. He says, well, I got this old car. I said, I got $1,000. And I signed a $1,000 check for him. And he took a couple of kids out of the jail, him and his wife. And we started the foundation. Then another resident old man heard about it. He gave another $1,000. And then I was playing golf with Leonard Firestone and Raymond Firestone and Lawrence Rockefeller here in Dorado, Puerto Rico. And Lawrence said, after 9, let's go have lunch. So while we were having lunch, Lawrence said, well, Gigi, what have you been doing? I said, well, this thing happened. He says, what a wonderful thing. He says, let's all give you $25,000 apiece, and you get that thing and get it real big. It was $75,000, and bingo, we took about 20 kids more out of jail, and we started the foundation, and right now we borrowed them. I think we were in debt like $6 million, and we have paid that money now, and we have a surplus. And my decisions in the foundation always have been decided by a board. You know, we have a concerned kind of foundation. I'm a big donor to it. I'm very proud to save, and we have a curriculum for 93 kids, but we do over 1,000 kids a year, and we feed them and we dress them, and we don't get federal aid. We don't want federal aid because the kids, the first thing they do in the morning is they pledge allegiance to the flag. And if you get federal money, you can't do that. So I want them to start respecting something before they start the day. And I'm proud to say that 99% of my kids attend school every day, and 99% graduate from college. So that only happens in Japan and in Cuba, where the education is so advanced.
That is awesome. Again, we're talking to Hall of Famer Chichi Rodriguez and telling us all about the charity work and his foundation. I always ask this of our Hall of Famers. When you look back at your career, what's the one tournament victory that stands out to you the most? Is it your first one, or is there another one that's a little more special for you?
The first one, the Denver Open. You know that stuff that they say that only majors count? When I played golf, everything was major. Man, I got $5,300. I thought I was the richest man on earth. But now these young guys win, and they tip $5,300.
Yeah. Yeah, and
you'll never forget that one because I tell you, I took my wife, my mother, out of the Bronx in New York and brought her to Puerto Rico. We bought her a nice home, and she lived there until she passed away.
And you played your last official round as a professional only a few years ago at the age of 76. How special was that for you to kind of take a bow and play one last event?
Well, you know, I always thought if you didn't think you could win, you shouldn't play. And at 76, I thought I couldn't win, so I told my wife, I said, you know, it's time to pack him in, and I'm not going to call any press conference or nothing to announce it. We're just going to walk out. And I really could go back and play some more tournaments, but, you know, because I never retired. I never announced. Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus made me cry three times. I didn't want anybody to cry for me.
Oh, well, that is awesome. Well, Chi-Chi, we really appreciate you hopping on with us this morning. Great to hear some of your stories, and we hope we can catch up with you again soon.
Absolutely, and I love North Carolina. You know, I won the Greensboro Open, and I set a record there that lasted for over 30 years. But those guys, those young guys are playing Shakespeare again, and they just run all over it, and they made it tougher. But, you know, the young guys are better than we were. And that means that we did a very good job with the game of golf when the young people took it over and became better than we were.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, and we always remember you winning up here in Greensboro. And, man, again, we look forward to speaking with you again sometime soon. Take care.
Absolutely. God bless you guys.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later. That's Hall of Famer Chi-Chi Rodriguez.
Yeah, and he did not disappoint.
No.
Did not.